The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So again, good morning and welcome to our Dharma Practice Day. For those of you who might be new, Dharma Practice Days are designed so that we can explore Dharma and practice in a variety of different ways. The idea being that if you do monastic practice, live in a monastery, you might spend a fair amount of time meditating, but you also spend a lot of time exploring the Dharma in other ways. There's studying, reading, there's discussions, there's a lot of discussion. In fact, a lot of the way that people learn in monasteries is not even from the teacher of the monastery, but rather is from the conversation with other people, other practitioners, other monks and nuns. And so and also the Sangha practice, the idea of practicing the Sangha and having a community of people you practice with, is a very important part of practice. And it's sometimes a practice people will intentionally avoid, because after all, it's people. And that's messy or difficult. And it's, you know, some people prefer the privacy of their own meditation practice. But actually, community practice, practicing with people and knowing people, is a very important part of the overall unfolding of practice and how we learn about ourselves and get to see ourselves in some deeper way. So on different Dharma practice days, we do different things. But often there's ways of just involve discussions and breaking into pairs and having some kind of conversations about some of the topics. And some people find it very valuable because it gives you a chance to discuss important areas of life that in normal life you never have a chance to really have a concentrated, focused discussion about these particular things. The theme for this year is the hindrances. And we are started last month with introduction to the hindrances, and then started with sensual desire. The first hindrance, and we'll continue with that today. Next month we'll do ill will. We'll do 2 months on ill will, and we're kind of doing 2 months on sensual desire. And now a little bit of background for the hindrances. The hindrances are that which hinder, and I like to think that it hinders. One of the things it hinders is our sense of purpose. That we have a purpose that we want to engage in. It can be sitting down and meditating, you know, staying in the present moment, being with the breath. It can be a purpose of I want to meditate every day. I want to make meditation a regular part of my life. It can be a purpose of Buddhist practice in a more general way, big part of my life. It could be other purposes, everyday kind of purposes. And as we kind of set ourselves a course to follow a certain purpose, there are things that come along that can hinder that. And we can't necessarily do a lot about the world things that happen, but we can do a lot about the inner psychological forces that come along that might hinder or interrupt or distract us from our purpose that we have. In terms of meditation practice, the Buddha emphasized 5 particular psychological factors that he emphasizes being particularly important for hindering the unfolding of meditation. And partly because these hindrances also hinder our ability to see clearly. They're talked about in the tradition sometimes as blinders, that which blinds us. And so when they're present, we can't really see what's going on in some honest way or clear way. And they're distracting, they're agitating, and so both the agitating quality of them and also the distracting quality of them keep us from our purpose, like just staying on the breath, keep us from getting concentrated and present. So it's a task of anybody who does meditation practice, especially Buddhist meditation practice, to become really familiar with these 5 hindrances. And the unfortunate news about becoming familiar means that you have to experience them a lot. And so we have to allow ourselves to it's important not to be dismissive of them or overcome them quickly or, you know, look for the key to the kingdom that just kind of banishes them once and for all. But rather to take the time to explore them, contemplate them. And there's two primary ways of doing that. One is to certainly do it in meditation practice and see how they come up there and how to work with them there. But the other is spend time in daily life with them, certainly seeing how they arise in daily life, but also in daily life, kind of, or outside of meditation, spend some quality time reflecting, contemplating, and thinking about, discussing with other people these hindrances. And so one of the things I offered you last month, which I'm offering you again this month, are a variety of reflections, that contemplations you can do at home. And some of these questions are things you can discuss with friends. Because if you explore and think about these things outside of meditation, what you learn and what you contemplate will come back to you, will be kind of in the background of your meditation and support your meditation practice. You'll be more familiar with the territory and how it all works. If you just rely on meditation to deal with hindrances, you shortchange yourself a lot of how rich the human mind can, the rich possibilities of the human mind to explore and develop and become wise around these areas. Here today we're going to continue with sense desires, which one impression that people will get from Buddhist teachings is that Buddhism has a very negative view of sensual desires. And you shouldn't have any of that stuff. And I think that's certainly a simplification, but I think it's not really appropriate impression, even though there are teachers who seem to have that kind of attitude towards sensual pleasure. All sensual pleasure should be kind of denied or pushed away or not included. So I'd like to start today with a discussion about around sense pleasure and its usefulness, its healthy aspect of it, its appropriateness of it, rather than being quick to talk about how to overcome sensual desire. And in doing that, I want to make a distinction between sense pleasure and the desire for sense pleasure. And that's a very important distinction. The desire for sense pleasure is much more likely to be a hindrance. And that's what it is. It's a sense desire that's the hindrance, not sensual pleasure in and of itself. So sense pleasure can be very useful. So I want to list some of the things, ways it's useful. When you have sense pleasure, you're in the present moment. The pleasure itself is a present moment phenomenon. And so you're in the present, which maybe is useful. Another thing is that certain kinds of sense pleasure can affect us in beneficial, healthy, and healing ways. This morning, for example, a small thing. I was here at the center. I was doing things a little bit for a few minutes here. And then I walked out the back door. And there was this cool, refreshing air out there. It just really, felt really pleasant to feel the coolness and the freshness of the air. And as I took in the pleasure of that, the air, I could feel a little happen. A little relaxation, a little kind of opening, a kind of settling into my body a little bit more. It was pretty subtle, it wasn't a big thing, but I could feel it. And there's some way in which taking in some of the simple sense pleasures of life can help us to relax, to settle in, and not just be present, but to be present in a way that's softening. And so the pleasure of sitting and having a cup of tea, it's not just simply that we're relaxing and unwinding by just doing nothing at all, but sometimes the pleasure of the tea or the coffee, the smell of the coffee, it's more than just pleasure. Sometimes it kind of makes us feel kind of more relaxed or more present in a nice way. This is not to justify drinking coffee. some of you are nodding already. But I'm trying to say that there is something quite wonderful about sense pleasure, and it can be very helpful. And I think sometimes it actually can be to some degree healing of a lot of the ways we're fractured or divided or upset or angry or to just kind of take in these simple pleasures of life. A sunset. A sunset is a sense pleasure thing. And some people are more than just relaxed, they're deeply inspired. It's very meaningful to have that, partly because maybe it's tied to beliefs or other ideas. And so then there's also what we call, maybe in English, refined sense pleasures. You know, arts, you know, you have music. It's music, you know, maybe is more than sense pleasure involved, but there's a lot of sense pleasure involved in listening to certain kinds of music. And it can have a very refined, very kind of subtle or deep, moving effect on us to sit there and just feel music in certain ways. Or to look at certain works of art, certain things that are done creatively, can have more than just a relaxing effect. It can do other things to us as well. Maybe because things are communicated, there's more going on. But I think when the colors are lined up just right, or the lines are just drawn just right, it has another kind of effect on us that is very meaningful. So I think it's very important to include opening and allowing for sense pleasure in our lives, and I think it's supportive and helpful for meditation practice. And then there's the sense pleasures that come from meditation itself. There can be physiological changes that happen as we relax in meditation. And those sensations that come from being relaxing are pleasant. And feeling those pleasant sensations then helps us to relax more. And there, to some degree, there can be a nice little loop that happens there. Sometimes people feel warm or tingly or feel light as they relax, and that warmth or tingling or lightness, expansiveness feels very pleasant, and that pleasure encourages us to stay more present. Especially if you notice that it's not as pleasant to wander off in thought. You know, and so why would I want to think? You know, if I'm losing touch with this thing that feels so good here, isn't that an interesting question? So why do you? So eating can be totally neurotic.
If for a person who enjoys very good food, uh-huh. Do I need to reduce that kind of environment?
Well, I wasn't joking about the neurotic part. A lot of these pleasures, sense pleasures, there can be a mixed. It can be mixed. The effect can be mixed. I've enjoyed food and really enjoyed it a lot. Boy, this is really great, until I finished the meal, and then for the next 2 hours, I wish I hadn't. What was I thinking? You know, I was seduced by the pleasure of the moment, to not take into account the effect it was going to have on me. And there's a lot of people in society in the world who are seduced by the. How could something that feels so good be so wrong? Now I've been to my meditation class, and they say, you know, enjoy your sense pleasures. So I'm just going to dive right in, and now I've created devastation everywhere. my spouse is going to leave me now because, so. So you have to be careful with, so you don't want to be naive, but the food, the pleasures of food, the sense pleasures of food can also have a beneficial effect. They can be nurturing, they can be relaxing, it can be healing. Certain pleasures, sometimes it comes with associations those foods have with us. You eat the foods of your childhood, and it's more than just a sense pleasure, but also the association of nurturing and things that might be there. But yes, being present for food can be a very wonderful thing, and refined food, you know, subtle sensations of food, for some people can be very good. And then there's a lot of suffering in our society around people who are addicted to the sense pleasure of food. So I want to make sure you understand there's two sides to it, and your wisdom will hopefully distinguish. So then there's also, as you open the door, the suffering that comes with the pursuit of sense pleasure, or the addiction to sense pleasure, or the overindulging in sense pleasure. There's some people who think that sense pleasure is where it's at, that if you have enough sense pleasure, you're a successful person. That's where it's at. Some people who, for whatever reason, have grown up thinking that sense pleasure is evil and bad, and you shouldn't have it, and actually you should deny it, and somehow if you feel sense pleasure, there's something sinful about yourself. And so there's kind of a, not just an avoidance, but a running away from any possibility of experiencing sense pleasure. You're not only not supposed to experience sense pleasure, but you're better off experiencing pain. So you strap a, there's some people who strap needles around their legs or something so that they have, constantly reminded of pain rather than pleasure. So people's relationship to sense pleasure can be complex. It can be mixed. It can be different relationships. People will learn from their childhood certain messages about sense pleasure. From their religion, they'll learn about sense pleasure. They'll learn about from experiences in life. They'll learn from disappointment. They'll learn from the suffering that they've encountered through it. And so some people are very hesitant. Some people jump in. There's a variety of things that go on. Some people's personalities seem to be driven much more. They're kind of connoisseur personalities. They're just there ready to enjoy everything. Everything's a sensual pleasure. Just going, let me just, and consume, That's how they are. And some people couldn't care less about a sense pleasure. Just like, I have more important things to do. Take time to have sense pleasure. I have my projects. or the newspaper to read or something. The world to save. So there's a whole range of relationships people have to sense pleasures. As we explore the hindrance of sensual desire, sense desire for sense pleasure, I think it's helpful to understand our relationship to sense pleasure itself before we talk about desire for it. Does that make sense? You understand that? So that's the first discussion we're going to have today. So what I'd like you to do is to divide up in pairs, and hopefully there's an even number. If not, there'll be, let's see. If there's one left person left over, I'll assign you to another group, group of three. So pair up, and what I'd like you to do is one person be the speaker and the other person be the listener. And the person who speaks, you are talking to someone who's there, but it's not really important that you convey something to them. You're not telling them anything for their sake. So it's very different than normal conversations where you're concerned with getting something across to the other person. The person is there as a witness as you explore for yourself out loud this question I'm going to give you. And if you're speaking, remember, you're really trying to explore something for yourself. So if you find yourself telling a long story about something that happened to you, you know the punchline, you know the results of the story. So kind of make it brief so you're not spending a lot of the time doing something maybe you didn't have to do. You can get and hopefully, because time's long enough for this discussion, you're going to reach the edge of what you normally would talk about or think about, and then you get to explore beyond the edges of your normal, And you might, maybe a couple of you, I don't know, but one option you have also, some people find it helpful, this exploration, is to, when you're talking, to actually close your eyes. And then you're not pulled into the world of the other person so much, and the person agreeing, or are they nodding enough, or, or are they frowning, or, but you close your eyes, so you're really kind of exploring it on your own, if you like. And the role of the listener is just to listen, not to ask questions or, say right on, just listen, and you can nod, No, the listener shouldn't close their eyes. I think they really should offer their presence. So the question is two questions. So what is your relationship to sense pleasures, pleasures of the senses? And it kind of is a subset of that is what's the history of your relationship to sense pleasure? So what's your relationship to nowadays to sense pleasure? I love it. What's the history? Oh, I used to be really troubled by it. It used to be hard for me. I didn't know it, I avoided it as much as I could, and my parents thought that it was, evil thing, and so those are the two questions. What is your relationship, and what's been the history of your relationship? How's it changed over your lifetime, perhaps? Is that clear enough? And so how you navigate those two questions is, just let it kind of happen, whatever. And so each person is going to have 10 minutes to talk. And that's, I'm doing you a favor, because these exercises are actually designed to be 15 minutes long. Yes, please. Yes. The way that you negotiate these two questions is up to you, or not even up to you. It's up to your mouth. your kind of chain of associations kind of leads you places that you're even surprised by. If you prefer to do it reversed, whatever you want to do is fine. It's very nice when you get surprised by what comes out of your mouth, because you're really kind of allowing. And don't be too concerned about getting it right. You might even, some things are a little bit exploratory. Let me try this out and see what this, how does it sound? Oh, me too. Turn off your phone. Yeah. Some of these phones are very pleasant to listen to when they ring, and mine is not pleasant. Someone said yours sounds like someone banging on pipes. Someone's heard it, so just nodded and said yes. I had one before. Someone gave me a new phone recently, and the one before I regret not. I missed the old one because I'd figured out recently that. The ringtone could be roosters crowing, and this one can't do that. And the roosters would crow, and only I would know that it was ringing the phone. And people wouldn't even blink an eye; they just thought it was the neighborhood. As the 10 minutes goes along, you might even find. Moments of silence as you kind of reach the edge of what's obvious, and then that silence it kind of percolates and new things kind of have a chance to surface that come up. Yes? I'll ring the bell after 10 minutes so you know to switch. Mm-hmm. I'll say something like just a pause for a minute, and then after the second 10 minutes I'll ring the bell and I'll give you a little different instruction. Yeah?
So I need to understand. So we're going to split up the two components of the questions into 10 minutes.
No, you have 10 minutes to talk, and in your 10 minutes, those are your two questions. You might end up answering only one, you might do both, it's how you work with these two questions is up to you. Don't worry about doing both, there's no set way. Just those are the two questions that are kind of in the mix, yeah? I think for the purposes of this discussion, I think it's good just to do the five senses. There is a sense pleasure of the mind as well, but I think it's might be more useful for this discussion here to stay with those. Okay, so why don't you pair up, and then if there's an odd number, why don't you come here and I'll help you. So we're just going to spend another, just a few minutes before taking a break. So before we take a break, does anybody like to say a little bit what that was like to have that conversation, that discussion? So, Victor.
it's a very interesting process. I discovered that I, possibly we, are willfully owned by our senses, and that certainly my life, and I've seen it in others, my life has subtly but distinctly been guided by those things, the reaction to the sense pleasures, and I include my mind in that. And it's until one can see how there's attraction or aversion or whatever to those, you don't really see how you're reacting in the long arc of your life. It's very interesting.
Great. Thank you. Mary?
Well, it was a good process. At first, of course, just talking about what I already know. And then the whole time I was talking, there was one thought that was sort of churning underneath that I didn't get to but came up in our 2 to 3 minute debrief, and that is that living, this is so cultural, but living our whole life, my whole life, driven by sense pleasure and the attachment to them, and then as they gradually start to drop away, there's a feeling of disorientation when they're not there, because I'm so used to them being there, and generally I'm surrounded by people who are so relating to sense pleasure. And it's not until I can stop. Now I have a frame for it, and years ago I didn't, and I just felt disoriented if I didn't feel pleasure. But now if I come back to my center is where I find the peace of not having the attachment. But it really takes some effort to get back to that. So that was my discovery.
Great, thank you. So, out there in the other hall.
Thank you. It's a delight for me to, again, find in this tradition an inclusiveness of the body and of the senses and the breath, of course, because sense pleasure in my history was to be denied. And so to include sense pleasure as another way of the aha or the release in the body and the inclusion of the body and the senses is so wondrous. And in this tradition, again, I am drawn more and more to it because it has such a basis in my reality, which comes to me through my senses.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're not called sentient beings for nothing. So maybe one more.
I had a little difficulty with trying to focus on the five without the six, the mind, and that for me it was really hard when I was talking to about my own experiences to really locate the sense pleasure in one of those senses without the mind to sort of mold them all together and tell me what it was about. Mm-hmm. So it was, that was interesting to experience.
That's very interesting. So that probably could be explored some more. So Okay, so so I think sense pleasure is a wonderful thing to experience, and has certainly a role in a wise life, role on the path. But you know, the body, it's mostly an element issue of the body. You know, especially the five senses. And the body, in and of itself, doesn't have much wisdom. And so, one of the interesting questions is, what's the relationship of wisdom, mind, desires, motivations, values, beliefs, on what happens with the body? It might be useful. It may be interesting to think of the body as kind of like childish. As wonderful as it is, and as profound as it is, it may be childish in the sense that it doesn't have the, you know, in and of itself, direction and purpose and value. And so, what happens when the overlay on top of that, the what could be called the mind or the wisdom or understanding or beliefs, and sometimes what's overlaid on top of it is very harmful, it's painful. You know, the rejection of the body, rejection of sense pleasures and senses. And so the whole range of things can be overlaid on top of it. And so that's the adult part, or the potentially the adult part, if we use that kind of language. So let's take a break, and let's do it for 15 minutes, and hopefully that's long enough. And please feel free to keep talking about these topics or anything else you want during that break.